I went into comics like blindly, you know, just sort of sleepwalking. I had no idea why I was doing it.
Born on October 2nd, 1926, in Chicago, Ramona Fraiden was the daughter of Peter and Irma Dombrezian, the former a renowned graphic designer and letterer. Ramona's father encouraged his daughter's artistic talent, and even though she herself wasn't particularly interested in it, she went to art school and met her future husband, Dana Fraiden, who also encouraged her to be an artist. Through a friend, she broke into the world of comic books at DC, her first work being the pencils and inks for a story called 4 Hours to Kill in the crime comic Gangbusters. She continued doing crime comics before being handed 2 installments of the Shining Knight feature in Adventure Comics. Her first regular assignment was on another adventure strip, Aquaman. She would go on to draw the Sea King every month for more than 10 years, being there for 2 hugely important Aquaman stories: how Aquaman got his powers, which comic book historians mark as the debut of the Silver Age iteration of the character, and The Kid from Atlantis, the debut of Aqualad. Fraiden left Aquaman and the comics business entirely for a time to raise a family, but returned to partner with writer Bob Haney for a new hero, Metamorpho. After a few issues of his solo title, she did a one-off story at Marvel on the Fantastic Four, returning to regular series work in 1975 when Plastic Man was revived in a solo series. She then hopped on to the newly launched Super Friends comic, drawing that book for almost 40 issues. She left the comics industry entirely in 1980 when she landed the assignment to draw the Brenda Starr comic strip, which she continued on for 15 years until she formally retired. But for Ramona Fraiden, retirement was an elastic word, because she continued to do one-off comic book assignments and became a regular fixture at Comic-Cons, where she continued to produce sketches for fans up until the age of 97. Join me to discuss the remarkable career of Ramona Fraiden, our fellow network all-stars, Chris and Cindy Franklin, and Max Romero. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Rob.
Thank you all for being here. As is obvious, everybody, for this episode of FW Presents, we're here to celebrate the career of Ramona Fraiden, just really one of the all-time great comic book artists. I think one of the single greatest artists the medium has ever produced. And we all have topics that we want to discuss with each other about different aspects of Ramona's career. So we're just going to start right off with Chris. What's your first question for the group?
Okay, guys. And whichever one of y'all wants to jump in first, go ahead. So
ladies first. Come on.
Ladies first. Okay, well, let's Cindy go first. What's one particular aspect about her art that you find appealing?
To me, it's the fact that her characters are clean cut and the women are attractive without being slutty. Which is not something you find in modern comics. That appeals to me. The women are beautiful. The men are handsome, but they are not out there. I mean, to me, that is a wonderful style to adhere to. Not only does she appeal, she did several children's books, but she appeals, of course, to any fandom, any age group with her art style. You don't have to worry about, oh, I've got to put a Ramona Fraiden book away, you know, when somebody walks in, you know. So.
That's literally never been said in the history of the world. I got to put the Ramona Fraiden book away.
So. Now, the guy that interviewed her in The Art of Ramona Fraiden, now his books, you do have to put away. Howard Chaykin.
Yeah. what a combo.
Max, what about you? What did you find particularly appealing about an aspect about her artwork?
Well, it's a little bit about what Cindy just said, is that it's her lines are very clean. It would be easy to mistake it for simplistic, but it's not. It's just it's a lot like Will Eisner, who she said was one of her inspirations when she was starting out. There's some Alex Toth in there. You know, there might even be a little bit of Herge in there. Just because what she's doing is being done with a minimum of lines. You know, there's not a lot of cross hatching. There's not a lot of, you know, deep shadows and, you know, all that sort of thing. There's not even a lot of background in some of her work, but it really still has an impact just because of how well it's done, how well she sets a stage, how well she, for lack of a better term, where she sets up the camera. You know what I mean? How the perspectives that she uses and the setting that she uses. It is just, it would be easy to mistake it for old-fashioned, which I kind of think maybe some modern readers, a lot of modern readers might think if they saw it now, but I really think that's a mistake because it's not old fashioned, it's timeless. And that really just kind of appeals to me. And I think that's what has appealed to people for her over the time of her extremely long career.
What about you, Rob?
Again, I've had time to think about this. And of course, we analyzed Ramona's work every month on For All Mankind for, like 3 years of the show or a little bit more. One of the, th I guess, I mean, there's so much stuff about her work that I like, but if you're boiling it down to one thing and all that, both of you guys just came up with, yeah, I agree to both those things. But I guess the one I would go for is, I've had a chance now, to look at her work from the very beginning because I've been studying all her Aquaman strips. And at the very, it is a fully realized world in that there are other artists I've noticed whose styles develop over time. And sometimes they get maybe worse over time, like they kind of peak and then they go down. But there are other artists who, like, you could see in the beginning, you're like, oh, you could see they're trying to get to where they're going to go. But in the beginning, they're not quite there yet. And I don't want to necessarily name other artists. I think about that because I'm not trying to be insulting, but Ramona's stuff was almost fully realized from the get-go. And her world looks, it doesn't look like any other comic book artist world. I mean, yes, you see some Will Eisner in there and, Max, you mentioned some of the other influences. And again, you could see all that stuff. But to me, there was no, Ramona Freyden's work was singular. And then it does not look like anybody else's. That, and there was something about the way that she was able to construct, as you mentioned, Max, like where she puts the camera, how she tells the story, and then also the combination of the clean lines and her anatomy, like you just mentioned, Cindy. Her women are gorgeous and voluptuous, but not like, and her men are muscular, but they're kind of like that beefy muscular, not the weird, angry, like
Exactly.
roided out thing where you look, they look really scary. Superman looks like a wrestler, I mean, and so her world is just fully realized. Any comic book that she ever drew, you're like, oh yeah, this is instantly Ramona Freyden. You took one panel and you can recognize what it is. And there's something about that where it's like, it kind of reminds me of when you go see a movie sometimes and you get the sense as you're watching the movie that like the people that made the movie don't know where it's going. And that sets up some anxiety in your mind. You're like, where's this movie going? And then other movies, you feel like you're in totally good hands. Like, oh, okay, the people telling me this story, they know where they're going. I don't know where it's going, but they know where they're going. And that to me is very reassuring. Ramona Freyden is like that. It's like this world is exactly what Ramona planned from panel one to the last panel of the last page. And that is, it's reassuring in a weird way.
Just real quick, something that you were saying about the art. One of the things I like about Freyden's art is that, like Cindy was saying, everyone is kind of classically handsome or beautiful. I mean, oh, her Wonder Woman, my God, is just the ideal Wonder Woman for me. But everyone kind of has, like you're saying, Rob, this Ramona Freyden fingerprint. I mean, you can see it so easily. Her work is so identifiable. But what I like is that all of her characters, all of her work are distinct within that style. Some artists tend to draw the same face over and over again. Ramona Freyden never did that.
No.
Yeah, that's actually what my that was the thing that appealed to me the most, Max, was her faces. Everyone's distinct. I know she says that she really opened up with broader caricatures with Metamorpho, but I think it was always there. Like Rob said, she kind of emerged fully formed. And it is a bit of that Will Eisner influence, I think. And if you look at the character Shark Norton, she drew in that famous Aquaman Green Arrow crossover in Adventure Comics number 267. I mean, he's got a little, his lips got that kind of weird Metamorpho thing going on, but he looks like, I mean, he could be a Dick Tracy villain, I mean, he's got that. And the cops that are in that story, they're very distinctive. I mean, that's just a for instance, but everybody had a look. And when she drew the Super Friends, when the few times Bruce Wayne was in the book, it didn't look like Superman in a suit coat and a turtleneck. It looked like a totally different character, So I mean, that all goes to that what Rob said as well, and what Cindy said. It all kind of goes together, that world that she built, and like you said, Max. You won't mistake it for anybody else. It's her work is like you can see it from a mile away. And that came up when me and Cindy found that little Superman book set that we talked about on For All Merch Kind that time. It's like, in the case, I'm like, oh my God, that's a Ramona Freyden Superman. You know, it's just like, you know, and I didn't know that that thing existed, and it was bought instantly. So,
Oh yeah. There, and that's actually that book set is in the Art of Ramona
yeah,
Freyden
it's
book.
mentioned in there now that we've got that book. It's like, oh, well, if we had this book before, we would have known. So,
And it, just for listeners, that is The Art of Ramona Freyden with a interview by Howard Chaykin of all people. And it's just it's but it's a wonderful interview. You know, if you don't know anything about Ramona Freyden, that will tell you everything you need to know.
It does, and it's got some wonderful, wonderful artwork in there that, I mean, that it's just a gorgeous book to look at as well.
Oh, there's a reason why I recommended it about every third episode on For All Mankind when we had to do an Inside Trades ad. I was like, I'll just plug this again. The Art of Ramona. It's a great book, everybody. Buy the damn thing. It's really, really good.
So, I guess let me ask my question, and this kind of goes to what I was saying about, you know, that some modern readers might think that Ramona Freyden is, her style at least was a little old fashioned, but I mean, I personally didn't think so. I thought, you know, it's good for anything really. But what title, if any, being printed today, do you think would be a good fit for her style? Rob, you want to go first?
All right, sure. I'm going to cheat a little because this book doesn't exist. But what the hell? I would love to see. I and this is partly inspired by a book that was published, which was they did that Jimmy Olsen miniseries last year, which was like the Goofy Adventures of Jimmy Olsen. Like it was done as a humor, kind of a humor title. And I would have loved to see Ramona Freyden do, because we know she did Brenda Starr for 15 years, Lois Lane. Do a Lois Lane title where it's Lois Lane having crazy adventures as a, you know, the Daily Planet's ace reporter. And yeah, occasionally Superman flies in to save her in the last, but for the most part, it's her. You know, maybe she knows Klugor and she's karate chopping guys and stuff like that. But like, I think that would be super charming to see a female-driven, you know, book drawn by Ramona Freyden, who I didn't even mention in the intro, as we all know, was like, what, aside from all the great art, and as you mentioned, Max, the astonishingly long career. I mean, like, no, she kept drawing. When she retired from doing convention sketches, that was a news story. Like, that was a thing that bubbled up on the internet at 97. She's packing it in, and people were like, oh no. You know, like, there were some people like, I'm never getting my sketch. You know, it's like, oh my God. But like, I would have loved to see her do Lois Lane. I think that would have been such a fun book to have, like the funny corner of the Superman universe, but drawn like, again, her style sat right in that weird mix of like, yes, it's cartoony, but it has the basic anatomy and realism there that it's not a cartoon, you know, it's not like a cartoon. Like, yes, it's obviously more lighthearted looking, and there's even some great quotes I found from her talking about that very thing about how the comics industry changed. But I just think I would love to see that side of the Superman universe just be full on, where she takes on the goofiest villains of the Superman universe and doing all that stuff. So I would have loved to have seen Lois Lane, you know, girl reporter as drawn by Ramona Freyden.
And you
That's
know, that
awesome.
would have been a great companion to that Jimmy Olsen series.
Yeah,
I think that
it would have
was
been.
what, Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen. And yeah, that would have been, oh my God. Now see, my life is nothing but things that I can't have. Chris, what about you?
You know, it's not being published now, but a few years back, there was the Super Sons book with John Kent and Damian. And that was a lot of fun, even though I really, really dislike Damian. But I like that book.
No.
I really like that book. And I would really have loved to seen her take a crack at it because she was really great at drawing kids that look like kids. I mean, her Aqualad, when she introduced him, was
Oh,
so.
yeah.
So vulnerable looking, you know, the poor
Yeah.
kid. I mean, you just like wanted to give him a hug, you know. He was just such a little sad sack of a little kid when, you know, Aquaman met him. So, and I mean, she did a great job with, you know, Wendy and Marvin and the Wonder Twins. And so, I mean, it would have been a lot of fun to see her, you know, take on, you know, the exuberant John Kent and the snarky Damian, you know, and just the dynamic between the two, all the facial expressions you would have got from her in a book like that. It would have been a lot of fun. I wish she would have, you know, at least got to do an arc in a Super Sons book. That would have been fun.
Okay. As for me, I would like to see, and this is just, I think, because where Chris and I are currently recording JLU cast, is I would like to see, I would have liked to have seen Hot Girl and Vixen. Just like, even if it was just a mini series, her take on that and how that would go together, and her take on those two characters and how she would bring in Vixen's powers and everything. I think that would be really cool.
Nice.
I would always read a Hawk Girl solo book, you know, like that would have been right over the plate for me if they've done something like that. So yeah. Oh, this is all stuff. Yeah. This is all stuff we can't have.
I know.
So, all right. So I have a question. This is really more for Max, but it really can be anybody, obviously, is that one of her runs is on Plastic Man, right? Mm-hmm. She comes back and does when Plastic Man is brought back in the mid-70s for a very brief time, she's the one drawing the book. I mean, as our resident Plastic Man expert, like, where do you put her in the pantheon of great Plastic Man artists? Because Plastic Man, you know, for his relatively spotty publishing history, he's had a lot of great artists drawing him. I mean, Jack Cole and Gil Kane and Phil Foglio, like, you know, great, great artists. So where do you personally put her in the Plastic Man rankings?
Easily top three. She is, because that, as you mentioned, it was so bizarre. So in the '60s, there was an issue 1 through 10 of Plastic Man. And then it went away for, I think, 10 years, 8 years, something like that. And then came back with number 11 through 20. And that's when, Ramona Freyden was drawing it in, from 76 to 77 at some time. And, but she, you know, it's a lot of what it is with Plastic Man and drawing Plastic Man, and where so many people kind of stumble, is that some artists don't really know what to do with him. And Ramona Freyden understood that Plastic Man should basically never be still. Her Plastic Man was very physical. Even when he was like leaning on a desk, he was, you know, no pun intended. There was a flexibility to the way she drew Plastic Man. And so for me, there is a direct line, maybe not in terms of style, but in terms of attitude, I guess, is one way to say it. There's a direct line from Jack Cole to Ramona Freyden to Kyle Baker, who I think also understood Plastic Man better than a lot of artists do.
Yeah.
And I would say that you can see who was inspired or influenced by Ramona Freyden and who wasn't, you know, who the artists that are also historians are, because you can see how these artists inspired each other. And she brought, and a lot of this was because of the scripting, but she brought a lot of whimsy to the character, because in the Bronze Age, you know, that's when Plastic Man was homeless, and that's when he was bitter and suicidal, and you know, things were not looking good for Plastic Man. And so when they brought him back, the scripts, but also her art, I think, did a lot to kind of shrug that off, and for good or ill, kind of set the character on that much more comedic track. But the thing with Ramona is that it was with Ramona Freyden, Ramona Freyden is that she never went too far in a way, you know, she never made her drawing necessarily the joke, you know, the joke was on the page and it was all together. It wasn't just Plastic Man making a shape for no particular reason. Everything she did, and I think this was true of her career, everything that she had a character do, everything that she had Plastic Man do, was for a reason. And that just wove into the story so well. And I really, really wish we had gotten more Plastic Man from her. I think that would have been incredible. I mean, she did have that one issue in the Super Friends, which was great. But you know, and in that art of Ramona Freyden, she talks about, like, because I think she was doing Freedom Fighters at the same time. She did not like Freedom Fighters, and she was pretty clear about that. But she did really enjoy Plastic Man, and I think it showed. And that, I think, is what makes her one of the top Plastic Man artists for me.
Well, just related to something else you were saying, Max, about calling her Ramona and acting like you know her, right? I wanted to mention that now I know that you have not met her. You didn't get a chance to meet her at conventions, but Chris and Cindy, you guys have, and I have, and that was definitely part of her career was that she was such a fixture at Comic Cons. I mean, she was at so many of them, and you know, again, she's working into her 90s doing sketches, which is just unreal. So I figured that's a good leaping off point before we move into the next question. Why don't you guys talk about how you met her at a Comic Con?
Well, I mean, we were trying to remember what con it was, but it was sometime in the late 90s, either in Pittsburgh or Detroit, because we went to them at different times,
Right. Between
pre-kids.
1998 and 2000, because Andrew was born in 2001.
Right. And so, you know, there were a lot of, like we were talking beforehand, there was a lot of like golden age, silver age greats there, you know, like Ramona, Sheldon Moldoff, Martin Noddle, Irwin Hassan. I mean, lots of guys that are unfortunately no longer with us. But, you know, we walked up to her and told her how much we loved her work, and she was very pleasant. She had lots
Aww.
of beautiful sketches, and luckily, me and Cindy, you know, eventually got our sketches
Right. We were
from
lucky enough, you know, I've got a Wonder Woman sketch and a Supergirl sketch and
no,
Christopher
Mera.
Mira, sorry,
Yeah.
Mira, and then Christopher has Batman.
Yeah, and we gave them each other as, you know, presents. So Ramona Fraiden provided our Christmas presents for a couple of years there to each other. So that was nice. So I'm glad we, because we always regretted that we were broke then. We always regretted that we didn't get a sketch
At the
then
time,
at the
yeah.
time. But it was still great that we got to meet her, talk to her. She was super nice, super pleasant. And you know, and she just, I mean, and then, I mean, I think that's the first time I had seen her artwork in a while, other than the piece she did for the History of the DC Universe hardcover that she, you know, that she's got Aquaman riding the dolphin up out of the water with the battle scene in the background. And I was gobsmacked then that her artwork hadn't lost a beat, you know,
Yeah.
and then it kept going like that. So for
Exactly.
another
Well,
50
and it's
years.
something that people might not be aware of this. She actually has three covers coming out next month for March is Women's History Month. And she has three
Wow.
different covers with her takes. Yes, there's three different covers. One of them is Supergirl's the main image, and then there's Power Girl, Big Barda, Mary Marvel.
I think it's Power Girl's comic, though.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I'm just telling so people can get
Okay.
it.
Mira, Zatanna, and old
Steel.
Steel.
His niece. Yeah.
The other one is, you know, Catwoman's the main image on the Catwoman book. I believe it's number 53 with Black Canary, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, Batgirl, the other Batwoman, and
Katana.
Katana.
Yeah.
Then, of course, my favorite, Wonder Woman, Wonder Girl, Vixen, you know, Green Lantern, Hot Girl, you know, we've got
Starfire.
Starfire, we've got all of these great characters. So you'll get to see, you know, this will be actually published in March, three different covers. And again, that's Wonder Woman, Catwoman, and Power Girl. And those are coming out next month.
Yep.
I did not
That
know
is
that.
amazing.
And
That
yes,
is
I have them
amazing.
on pre-order.
Wow.
So.
Oh my God. I met her at the first San Diego Comic-Con that I went to, 1998. And, you know, I had been to Comic-Cons before and gotten sketches, but this was like a much bigger venue, obviously. It was the biggest venue imaginable. And she was sitting next to Nick Carty. And I'm like, well, this is perfect. I can get all my Aquaman sketches and just in one fell swoop. And I
In
go
one
up to
go, yeah.
in one go, and I go up to Nick Carty, and he does this. He was could not have been a nicer guy, and he does this sketch for me. And I don't exactly remember the prices, but I know that I can remember the proportions, which still works for this joke, because he did the sketch for me, and I then literally take three steps over to Ramona, and I introduce myself, and I tell her what a fan I am, and I hand her my sketchbook, and she sees that Nick Carty did the first page, and she goes, "How much did Nick charge you?" And I said, 30. And she pauses and goes, "Okay, 25."
What?
Yeah,
Oh,
bless you, Ramona. I love you so much. Thank you. That was great. So, and then that was, and I got to meet her at other cons later on. And like, I interviewed her for the Aquaman shrine, of course, and things like that. And she was just always so failingly nice. And it's kind of amazing. You think, like, you know, we were talking about this before we started, where it was like, you know, you look at her, her list of credits on IMDb, right? And it's hundreds and hundreds of books, one Marvel. Out of all these 231 story credits, one Marvel credit. But you look at this and you think, like, to her, this was one of, you know, any given story is like 8 pages out of the 4 billion pages she drew in her 60, 70 year career. And yet, you know, here I am, some nerd asking her about, you remember that one where Aquaman goes on the alien planet? Like, no, she doesn't remember that. What am I talking about? I'm like, but she was always so unfailingly nice about it, which I always very much appreciated.
I truly do regret not having to, you know, unfortunately, you know, for various reasons, I don't go to a lot of cons, and but she is definitely someone I would have wanted to get a sketch from. And I'm you know, and she, her work is online through an agency for sale, but I would have liked to have met her in person. That would have been great. Well, I would actually like to, I would have liked to have seen her on Daredevil. Just because and maybe not the storyline and the storylines that are going on now, but the what made me think of this was Chris Samnee and the work that he did, and that made me think of Ramona Freyden, and I think she would have been a really interesting artist to work on. That she would have been at least backup stories or something. I think, you know, she would have maybe taking us back to to the Daredevil who's singing while he's swinging through the city. You know, that I would have, it would have been interesting, I think, for her to take on, to bring her style of art to such, to a character that can be so dark sometimes. And finally, I just would, anything from the JSA, any JSA character you want her to work on, if you want her to work on JSA altogether, I think she would have knocked that out of the park.
Well, that's a good segue to another question I had, which is similar to what Max asked, but my question is more like, throughout her history, through her career, what title or feature do you wish she had worked on, like during the period she was active in comics, like other than Aquaman, other than Metamorpho, Plastic Man, Super Friends? Which one would you like to have seen, Max?
You know, I am going to sneak it in there. I would have liked, like I said, I would have liked to have seen her come back to Plastic Man or keep working on Plastic Man. But I think she would have, you know, she, like Rob mentioned, she only did a single issue at Marvel of Fantastic Four. I would have liked to have seen her maybe do Spider-Man. I think that would have been fun for her to do. I would have liked to have seen, I think she could have done a Wasp comic at Marvel. Just because, you know, she, you know, we kind of mentioned it before, but she drew women so well, and so respectfully, yes. I guess. And I think she would have had so much fun with a character like Janet Van Dyne. I think that would have been a lot of fun to see from her. Back on the DC line, I would have liked to have seen her work maybe on Big Barda and Miracle Man. That could have been fun for her. And this is kind of out in left field. I would have liked to have seen her on Dead Man. I think Dead Man would have had an interesting look with her on it. She wasn't one for the creepy stuff or anything that was too dark. I know she did do some of it, but she's, you know, she kind of said in interviews that she didn't really care for that much. But I think she, in that era, in that time that she was working, I think Dead Man would have been at the very least interesting to see from her.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of, you know, what she did with Metamorpho's face. You can imagine what she did do with Dead Man's, you know. So, yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. What about you, Rob?
I thought about this a long time. And I hate that my answers are so kind of obvious, and that it's like I'm thinking of her as putting her on more like women-centric features, because it's obviously she could draw lots of different things. But her career at DC overlapped for a long time with their romance titles, and I would have loved to seen her draw in some of the romance books, like what that would have looked like, especially in the late 60s with kind of like the mod hippie girls. That would have been really fun. I just, like, if you ever look at some of DC's romance books, the covers are amazing. I would have loved to seen what like the interiors would look like, or what a romance thing would have looked like as drawn by Ramona Freyden. So like, and DC kept publishing romance comics into like the mid-70s, like 77. They were still doing them. Paul Kupperberg famously crows about that. He wrote the last like DC romance book. He's like, I killed the romance genre. But like, I would have loved to see her tackle some of those stories. I think they would have looked so cool. I probably still at that age wouldn't have bought them because they're like, hey, Vicky romance comics. I look at them now and I'm like, oh my God, they're gorgeous. So I think that would have been so fun to see her tackle that.
Okay, that makes me wonder what she would have been like on a Western, like maybe Batlash.
Ooh, yeah, I like that. I like that. Imagine her Jonah Hex.
I actually have one.
Oh, dear.
Somebody did a commission of Jonah Hex, asked for a commission, and, you know, where they were on Catskill Comics, which is who represented her, you know, I would take a screenshot of a lot of her work of different characters that she did. There was Thor, there's all of these things that I've got screenshots of, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Somebody's got a Ramona Freyden archive.
I actually do on my phone. I mean, I was actually just looking at it just now, and I think there's like 300 pictures on there.
Oh my gosh.
I have an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it was all takes, you know, that you didn't necessarily get from, you know, her artwork. And it would be, you know, like there's a Spider-Man on there. There's tons of Thor and Hulk and Bride of Frankenstein and Scooby-Doo and Maleficent and, you know, all of these different takes that she did. And they're fairly recent, within the last 3 or 4 years. And I mean, they're amazing. And again, this woman was 97 years old and she did not quit drawing until January of this year. So within the last 2 months.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, it's. Yeah. Well, speaking of all those different characters, what series would you like to have seen her on, like throughout her career?
I would have liked to have seen her do a regular Wonder Woman feature. Mm-hmm. Obviously. Yeah. You know. I know that's an obvious one, but you know.
It's kind of a no-brainer. Why didn't DC put her on Wonder Woman? You know, it's like, let's put our female artist, like the only real, like, one that's like got a, you know, a significant name and following on our marquee female character, you know. How did that not happen, you know?
It wasn't like Wonder Woman ever sold well, so what the hell did they have to lose, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I do have the one, though, that I would love to have seen, and this is me fan casting, but imagine in the 50s and 60s, she took like one third of Sheldon Moldoff's Batman output, and her and Dick Sprang have similar approaches, similar styles.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what she could have done with Gotham and all the rogues. And I've seen her sketches of them. They look great, but just imagine her in like with the Batman of the late 40s, early 50s, like before all the sci-fi stuff came in. And just how great that would have looked. I mean, if she stayed on the books, she'd have transitioned into the new look era as well, because she drew the first Brave and the Bold team up with Batman and Green Lantern. So that would have been wonderful. I mean, I and that's no knock against Sheldon Moldoff or Lucero Schwartz or any of the other guys, but you know, it's all Dick Sprang in the 50s. Batman. So if you could have her there too, oh man, oh, just
to me, she is the perfect melding of Golden Age and Silver Age sensibilities and look.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, because she's got like the slick style of the Silver Age, like the DC Silver Age, that polished style. But she's also got that more cartoony, for lack of a better word, the caricaturesque. Kind of style.
That one, not
Yeah, and which also makes, I think, would have been perfect in the 70s if she had done some Shazam work.
Yeah,
because I think, you know, she could have kept that whimsy that was there without being a slave to the CC Beck look, and kind of like she did with the Super Friends. It was kind of in the vein of the Alex Toth designs, but she didn't just slavishly follow them.
No.
So she could have done her own thing with, you know, and imagine her Mary Marvel, which, you know, there's sketches of it, obviously, and she's going to do that cover. But, you know, and what she could have done with Savannah and all the villains and everything, it would have been a lot of fun. No knock against Don Newton and Alan Weiss when they went in that more realistic direction. But, you know, I would have kind of liked to have seen her sneak in there and do a few issues of Shazam.
Her Mr. Mind would have been great.
Oh yeah.
You know, just as a quick aside, how crazy is it that basically for a time there at the Big Two, there was basically two women working. There was Ramona Freyden at DC and Marie Severin at Marvel, and that was it.
That was
And
it.
most people didn't even know who Ramona Freyden was. That's crazy to me.
I
You
was
know, I mean, how
relieved.
I mean, I guess Marie Severin kind of benefited from Stan's soapbox. But you know, it would be nice if people mentioned the two in the same breath because they were really it.
She mentioned there was an interview with her, and it's partly quoted in an obituary on Comics Journal where she mentions that she was doing Aquaman while Marie Severin was doing Submariner. And
Oh,
it was like,
wow.
you know,
Okay.
like, what? Okay, what's that about? And something else just related to her career in comics being so unique is that I was relieved to when she was asked about sexism because she worked from home. She didn't deal with it very much. And she basically said, except for one guy who was like a creeper that she told to F off, like she just didn't really have a problem with it. And I was so relieved because I sort of envisioned Ramona Freyden in like Mad Men, except set in the comics world, and I'm like, oh no, I don't want that to happen. But I was happy to find out that that really wasn't, from her perspective, was not a problem. It's like, oh, thank goodness. It's like,
Yeah.
jeez.
Well, and I think that leads us to my next question. You know, because where do you guys think? Well, let me rephrase that. What artists working today do you think can kind of fill in that Ramona Freyden space or has been filling it out? Wouldn't you, Chris?
The one that popped in my head immediately was Doc Shainer. I really like his style. I mean, he's got that very clean, that very, classic kind of style about his art. It's there's an energy, a fun energy to everything he does. It's got that sparkle that Ramona Freyden's art always had. It's got that, that very confident, like, this is what this character looks like in every panel. It's very consistent. They both kind of worked almost, and I saw her mention that in a way, even though she never apparently worked in animation, she still kind of, used the mechanics of animation to basically, like, okay, this is the way this character looks from every angle. She had every character figured out. And I think Doc Shaner's that way too. And he's done some character stuff. Like, one thing that made me think about her, I thought about Doc Shaner as being kind of a modern Ramona Freyden, and I really loved his take on Shazam. And then that made me think, oh, well, that kind of worked in that way. I'd like to have seen her do Shazam, do Captain Marvel. So that's kind of how it goes around. But I think, it also made me think, I loved what he did on the Future Quest title with the Hanna-Barbera characters. And I'm like, oh, that would have been good for Ramona to do too if she'd worked on that book. So,
Oh man, how fun would that have been?
yeah.
That would have been great. Cindy, who's your pick?
Honestly, to me, I think Bruce Timm owes a lot to Ramona Freyden. The clean lines that he has on the animated series before the new adventures of, but I see a lot of that there. I mean, as far as influence and things like that, I think he must have been raised on those comics.
Rob?
We should have coordinated our answers because I thought Doc Shaner. I'm like, oh damn, Chris just said that.
He's on my list too.
But the other one I thought was Michael Cho, and that Michael Cho has that energy. One of the things that I talked about on For All Mankind during the Ramona Freyden years was I loved her attention to detail. In that, you would have a scene in the Hall of Justice where the Super Friends are regrouped to discuss whatever insane villain Ian B was throwing at them that month, and like, she doesn't just draw the Super Friends standing there. She draws Superman leaning back on the desk in the Hall of Justice, like you would in an office, because that is his office, And it was like she threw in that kind of body language that was extra effort for her to draw because, again, she could have just drawn it just standing there or not drawing them at all. She could have just drawn one super friend in the background. No, she draws all five. And like, Superman's got his feet up and Batman is sitting on the desk and Aquaman is doing this. But it's got that, there's a constant movement to it. Part of that was on that book because she was being inked by Bob Smith, who was her, I think, her best inker, beside herself. I think he was his best anchor. But Cho, Michael Cho, has that energy, like those characters are moving in any given space. And I think he brings a lot of that kind of energy to it. And that's, you know, that's one of those things where I'm like, God, why isn't there Super Friends, you know, the modern Super Friends comic drawn by Michael Cho, that kind of thing. Again, another one of those Max. Why can't I, you know, I don't have the things I want, that kind of stuff. But I every time I see his covers for those Silver Age omnibuses, Omnibuy, I feel like that's the spirit of Ramona Fraiden in that work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, the, you know, so you guys have mentioned people that were on my way too long list here. But one of the people that I thought of was Cliff Chiang, who did Paper Girls. He's done I think the most recent thing he did was Catwoman, Lonely City. And a lot of that is because his art also has those very clean lines with a, you know, that attention to body language that you were talking about, because there is a lot of that in Ramona Fraiden's work. You know, people are never just posing. You know, if you put them all in suits, they look like they are, you know, in an office, like you said. And, you know, and you saw that in her Plastic Man run too. You know, there was always people in the NBI office just kind of doing things in the background. And you know, Cliff Chiang just has this very, I know it sounds light to say it this way, but he has this very pretty style that I think kind of echoes Ramona Fraiden a little bit, in the sense that it's clean, it's simple, but nothing is wasted, you know, I mean, which is maybe a better way to say it. Not necessarily simple, but it's lean. And that's one thing that I really appreciate about both of them as artists. I also thought of Colleen Coover, who did Bandette, which I don't know if you guys are reading that or not, but that's also, that to me, just has that kind of Fraiden vibe to it. And, you know, I mentioned Chris Samnee before. So yeah, I mean, it's funny because these are artists who, like Fraiden, are well known, I guess, within a certain circle, but maybe not necessarily as well known as they should be, which is, I think, kind of the crime and the crime against from Ramona Fraiden. You know, I wish more people talked about her more often.
Okay, well, one thing I'd like to know, guys, is just this is kind of like a fun throwout when we've talked about her take on other characters. But, you know, aside from the obvious, you know, Aquaman, Metamorpho, Plastic Man, the five main Super Friends, who's a character, what's a character that you particularly liked her take on that we did get to see? Cindy, what about you?
I mean, as I said, you know, it's always going to be Wonder Woman. I'm sorry.
I said not Wonder Woman.
I don't care. It's Wonder Woman.
Okay. All right. Max?
You know, that I really kind of liked her, that one Marvel appearance, that Fantastic Four number 133. But I mean, she rendered everyone on, you know, she rendered everyone in the FF very well. But I really liked her Thundra. I thought her Thundra was fantastic. You know, she was muscular, and she just had this scowl on her face the entire time. The physicality, there's a panel where she bonks the thing on the head, and his face and her face, it's wonderful. I would have, she just being exposed to that, you know, very recently, you know, like within 24 hours, makes me wish there had been like some sort of Thundra miniseries done by Ramona Fraiden. Her take on that character made me more interested in that character than I've ever been before.
That'd been nice to see in one of those backups in the treasuries that they did, Rob. Yeah. Those random backups. Well.
Okay, I mean, wait, just butter me up like a Sunday biscuit, Chris. I mean, come on.
I've got to remember that for the
okay. Player. Ironically enough, the guy from New Jersey is giving you the Southern phrase.
Just as a
side before we move off this regarding Thundra, right? If she doesn't make a cameo in the Fantastic Four movie, I'm giving that movie a half star demerit. I don't care how good that movie is. If it's a 5-star classic, but no Thundra, 4.5 stars. That's just, I'm just calling my shot right now.
Well, what character would you like? What character did you like that she drew other than the obvious ones, Rob?
Well, I mean, luckily in Super Friends, you know, all those guest appearances. You know, every time a JLA'er would show up, I'm like, oh, I get to see Ramona Fraiden drawing Hawkman. I get to see Ramona Fraiden drawing the Atom or Green Arrow. Like, that was always a treat. But I'm not going to pick any of them. I'm going to go with Seraph, which she co-created. I mean, I don't know if she co-created the character. She at the very least developed the look for her. And, you know, we mentioned earlier, I love the way she draws guys because they're that kind of they're muscular, but they're that beefy weightlifter, strongman kind of thing from the 40s. They're not the weird rippling tri-delts and all that, you know, really creepy. And Seraph is just that times 10. Like, he's just he can't get through doors. He is so big. And, you know, we were going on and on about it on the show that to me, Seraph was like the breakout character that never really quite got the breakout he deserved. And so when he shows up and he teams up with Superman, you're like, this, oh my God, I love this guy. He looks so cool. So to me, Seraph, I mean, he got the backup strips drawn by Bob Ochsner, and those look great. And we went on and on about them. But, oh man, did I love the way Ramona Freyden drew him. And I'm guessing his design is her work, I assume. I don't know that for a fact, but I can't imagine Ian B had any say in. He probably created the character, but he probably handed it to her to design. So part of the reason he looks as cool as he does is because she designed his costume.
Yeah. I just looked that up, Robin. Yeah, it looks like she co-created it with Bridwell.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, just the global guardians that she created in that. I mean, DC got a lot of mileage out of those characters, especially, you know, Fire and Ice. You know, I know later they said it was a different Ice, whatever. But whatever, it's still supposed to originally have been the same character. So, but speaking of Super Friends, of course, you know, like you said, it was a great to see her do all the different JLA members. But the ones that stuck out to me the most, and she got another shot at this, one of these was, well, really both actually, was Hawkman and Hawkgirl. You know, we covered Super Friends 7 on For All Mankind, Rob, and that was one of my earliest comics, and that may actually be where I met the Hawks before seeing them on the all-new Super Friends Hour. And that shot of Hawk Girl Shiera yelling at the camera has lived in my brain for decades. She's like, Katar, we've got to do blah blah blah, while they're fighting this monster with Owl Woman. And I really liked her take on them. I mean, they looked on model, but they had an extra flair that was all Freyden, you know. And I, it would have been fun to see her do more with them, because, you know, you had flirtatious Shiera and stuffy Katar. It would have been fun to see the dynamic between them two, with Ramona Freyden handling them.
Oh, that would have, yeah, again, another this episode is so frustrating. It's all these things that we don't get. I have one more question.
So what do you guys think is Ramona Freyden's greatest contribution to comics, and why is it Metamorpho?
This is the story of the Element Man.
Coming soon, everybody.
Yeah, he's going to be a movie star, Metamorpho, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which is crazy. That's crazy.
If you do that, I'll sing the ukulele song my kids learned for the program.
Oh, no, okay, I'll quit.
You better.
You know, her greatest contribution, I could say her body of work, honestly. It's just, just the gift of her body of work. But if you had to like single out, then yeah, I mean, her co-creation of Metamorpho, probably, because I mean, that was honestly not, I mean, that was DC waking up and saying, oh crap, what's Marvel doing? You know, basically it was a Marvel comic at DC. Her and Bob Haney did, and it kind of kicked DC out of their you know, button down, we wear a three piece suit to work every day stodginess, you know, and get hip, you know, in the 60s, and it was fun, you know. I wish she'd stayed on it longer, and I'm kind of surprised she didn't, because it was like really popular. And but she had a kid to raise, and she's like, I'm out. You know, I did like two showcases, or two Brave and the Bolds and four issues of the series, and I'm gone, you know. But yeah, I'd say it's probably Metamorpho.
You mentioning Metamorpho makes me think one artist that none of us named in terms of filling the Ramona Freyden space, Mike Allred. Totally Ramona Freyden kind of thing. Cause when he did the Metamorpho strip for Wednesday Comics, like, that is the funky, crazy metaphor for ship. So yeah, he's another one that I think completely, you saw that direct line from her work to his.
Yep.
Totally agree.
you know, Max, that question sort of leads to something I wanted to bring up about this. And I wrote a memorial piece for 13th Dimension on Ramona Freyden. You know, her work is so vast that, you know, I could limit down just what I wanted to talk about to one strip. And this is more, you know, kind of my personal wheelhouse is, of course, her run on Aquaman was absurd. It was 10 straight years, which was, you know, that's just unheard. And back then it wasn't unheard of, but nowadays it completely is. And I will never be able to prove this because it's a counterfactual and you don't know. But as I have said many, many times, you know, Aquaman and Green Arrow are the, aside from the big three, are the only other superheroes that continually were published every month during the drought, the superhero drought. And I honestly believe part of the reason that Aquaman survived, I mean, I don't know how they knew back then what strip sold the book versus others. You know, Adventure Comics had like three strips in it. How did they know that Aquaman was more popular than what The Shining Knight would have been? Maybe that was by mail, you know, letter columns, who knows? But she brought such visual life to those stories, which could be, of course, very formulaic. They're all eight pages. There can be no character development. Aquaman is the same guy at the final panel that he was going in. But she brought such visual life to those strips. And for so many years, they were unavailable, except for, as I mentioned in the intro, his origin story and the Aqualad debut. Most of them you only could get in old back issues. I honestly don't know if Aquaman would have survived as an ongoing character without Ramona Freyden being so good, with that strip just looking so gorgeous. And, you know, the piece I did for 13th Dimension, I had to limit it down to 13 great splash pages. My initial run through of all of her issues of Adventure drawing Aquaman, like I just did the, you know, the first draft of like, okay, I'm going to pick, I had like 30 choices of 30 great ones. And then I'm like, oh my God, I've got almost three times what I need. So I had to really burn it down. But it's just this, the, and it was sort of what I talked about earlier is that it's a complete vision. Aquaman is a complete world unto itself in that strip, and it doesn't look like Superboy. It doesn't look like Green Arrow, the other features in the book. And I really think that Aquaman survived partly because she was the look of his adventures for 12 years. And he said, other than in 1960, where he starts appearing in Justice League of America, she was the only artist to draw him for 12 straight years. And I really think that that's part of the reason he survived. And that reminds me of a quote that I found in that memorial piece where she talks about, it says, as the 1980s dawn, Freyden was happy to part company with superheroes, which she felt were evolving in a direction that did not lend itself to her own upbeat heroic approach. Quote, Aquaman is a good marker of what's happening, she said in 2018. When I was drawing him in the 50s, he was nice and wholesome with a nice haircut and pink cheeks. Very handsome. I had a crush on him. And then you could see what's happened to him. It got more and more violent, and then he lost his hand, then he had a beard, and he looked psychotic. You know what? I don't get it. Preach, sister. You know? I mean, it's like, how could I love Ramona Freed anymore? Well, apparently this quote makes me love her a little more. So I think part of the reason that I had a character to obsess about is thanks to her, is thanks to those stories being as good as they were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we... You know, I think we owe her a lot. I think we owe her in terms of just her output as an artist. I think we owe her in terms of being a woman in an extremely male-dominated industry and for so long. And I think we just owe something to her sensibility. I mean, she's she maybe understood superheroes in a way that people kind of forgot along the way.
I think that's a good place to wrap this up. Is there anything else we want to say about? I mean, look, we could go on and on about Ramona Freyden.
Oh yeah, I mean,
but you know, we gotta. So I think that's a good place to leave it. I mean, for all of you out there that aren't as familiar with her work, go check it out. You can do like Cindy does and just right click every single image that's ever created with Ramona Freyden. Apparently, according to the rules of NFTs, that means that Cindy owns all that artwork now. That's her copyright. But no, I mean, there's so much out there. And as Cindy pointed out, which I didn't even know, there's more work to come.
Yes. She's
still doing covers at 97 years old. Absolutely. Incredible. Absolutely amazing stuff. And a lot of
those hit the stands in March. This next month, they hit the stands. There's three of them.
Unreal, unreal. And of course, we'll plug one more time. The Art of Ramona Fraiden book is just a treasure trove of stories and her artwork and stuff. So it's just an amazing career, you know, just really, I think, one of the great artists that the medium has ever produced. And it's just great that we got to enjoy so much of her work, so much consistent creative output for so long. And so I was going to say, it wasn't great doing this episode. We were hoping, she seemed immortal. You know,
right.
Still in conventions did 96. So we were hoping we would obviously never have to do this episode, but we did. But anyway, again, just an amazing career. So rest in peace, Ramona Fraiden. So Chris, Cindy, Max, thanks all for coming on and discussing this with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Rob.
Yes.
Well, anyway, thank you all for listening. And of course, if you want to support the Fire & Water Network, just go to patreon.com. And so big thanks to Gord Tolton and Davis Gutierrez for their support of the Fire & Water Network. We really appreciate it. So like I said, everybody, go check out the work. It's just amazing, amazing stuff. And rest in peace, Ramona Fraiden.
You said previously that you can't really take superheroes seriously, but that you enjoyed humor comics. And it's interesting that the superheroes that you seem most comfortable with were sort of the less classically heroic looking. Yeah. Like, was it easier maybe to draw Aquaman because he's more fantastical than sort of typical superhero?
He was hard for me to draw.
Was he?
Yeah, he still is.
What was hard about it?
He was sort of blank, I thought. I shouldn't say that, I suppose.
I think it's okay now.
But, you know, I really wasn't interested in drawing fish and...
No?
And in those days, you know, there was no internet. I couldn't do research unless I ran, you know, out to New York or somewhere to go to a, you know, get a picture collection somewhere. Mm. So I had made up most of the fish, and I'm afraid they kind of look like it. But I really wasn't interested. It was just a job. I was making some money I shouldn't say that, because now I, looking back on Aquaman and seeing what they've done to him, I think, oh my God, he was such a wholesome, you know, apple cheek kind of a guy, 50s sort of a guy, you know, and now he's got hooks and beards and he looks psychotic, and it's terrible.